Morning. Today's Daf Nida Samach Gimel. We are today on starting today on Samach Beis Amud Beis, about halfway down the Amud. Discussion between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan on terms of Tuma Balua. The general idea of Tuma Balua is this idea that if you have Tuma that's absorbed within something else, so because it's absorbed, so therefore it's insulated. That Tuma does not escape. That Tuma does not transmit to another item. And this is the principle of Tuma Balua. Tuma Balua is accepted principle. We learned it back in Hulin at length, and we're discussing it now in Masechta Nida here in the ninth perek. And the idea that goes behind Tuma Balua is connected to our discussion here because of kesem. The kesem is a stain, most probably it's blood that comes from the woman, although we don't know it came from the woman, and there was no hagasha, so the woman's not in need of midaraisa, which we've discussed now extensively in the course of our masechta. But right now we're focusing more on the clothing and the stain that's on the clothing. So first of all, a test. We learned yesterday a test that's performed on the dam in order to see whether it's dam or it's not dam. That's the seven chemical agents that's applied to an item, to the stain, in order to determine whether or not it's blood or it's something else. The Mishnah gives a real clear prescription in terms of what exactly you're supposed to do, what are the seven agents that you're supposed to put in a particular order on the stain. If the stain either disappears or it just simply fades, so then we now know it's blood. Also, we made this point very clear yesterday, also it's mevatel, meaning that the blood, certainly the caked on blood that's on top of it, now is gone. Either there's a little bit of blood inside of the garment, that's fine, that's balua, that's absorbed, and that's not a concern. Now, if you're makpid on that, which we're going to be discussing the beginning of this morning, it's the end of yesterday's daf, if you're makpid about it, so then that becomes a different story. But if you're not makpid about it, so that's it's tuma balua, and therefore it does not transmit tuma. Now, seemingly, Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish disagree about this point. They talked yesterday, an unusual scenario, but you had a shard of earthenware, and it had absorbed in it a liquid of tumah. A liquid of tumah, let's say, for example, it was a bowl used, it was a toilet bowl used by a zav, so that means now that it has urine in it, and then the bowl broke, and a shard of this bowl now that has tumah absorbed inside of it. So let's say this shard goes into an oven, earthenware oven. Now, as we know, as we discussed time and again, earthenware ovens, makabel tuma bisocho, with the interior, just the interior airspace. So when the toilet bowl shard goes into the oven, so now the toilet bowl shard, which has the urine inside of it, is now in an oven. So is the oven tuma or tahor? Well, the Mishnah tells us, we learned the Mishnah yesterday, the Mishnah is from Kalim. So the Mishnah tells us that if I heat the oven up, so then the oven becomes tummy. Because what happens when I heat the oven up? So it expresses the liquid from the shard, having the liquid now go outside of the shard into the interior airspace of the oven, and the oven now is tummy. That's what the Mishnah taught us. It sounds like for the Mishnah that before heating it up, so then the oven's not going to be tummy. And why? So presumably because of Tuma Balua. This is the easiest way to read the Mishnah. This is how Rav Yochanan read the Mishnah. Rav Yochanan says it doesn't matter what that shard was collected. It either it had mashkin kalim, mashkin chamurim, whatever degree of tumah the shard had, because the liquid was absorbed in the shard, so therefore it does not emit any kind of tumah. The tumah is insulated inside the shard. This is the idea of tuma balua. Now, Reish Lakish did make a distinction between whether or not the shard had mashkin kalim versus mashkin chamurin, whether the liquid inside was not a source of tumah, not an avatumah. If it was just a mashka, versus whether it was an avatuma. And according to Reish Lakish, if it's an avatuma, so then the oven is going to become tame, even before the oven is heated up. It's difficult. First of all, the Mishnah doesn't read as well for Reish Lakish as it did for Rav Yochanan. And it's also difficult because the Gemara went through a number of Mishnayos and Braisos yesterday that would seem to support Rav Yochanan, that this concept of tuma balua does not make any discrimination in terms of whether or not it's a mashkin chamorin versus it's mashkin kalin. Okay, so this is what we're in the middle of discussing, and we're going to finish it up. We're going to pick it up where we left off yesterday. Nivla b'ksus. Okay, it's about 10 lines from the bottom of the Amud. This is where we ended off yesterday. Nivla b'ksus im miskabesus v'yosim yemenu revias dam tamei v'im lav tahora. So let's say it got absorbed into a garment. Now, it means blood. Okay, the Mishnah over here is describing blood, human blood, that got absorbed in a garment, and you laundered it. And through the laundering process, you were able to extract the blood from it. If a revias dam comes out, so it's going to be tamei, otherwise it's going to be tahora. Now, Revi's dam gets extracted, so the simple reading of this Mishnah is that only upon the point of extraction is it going to be tameh, and not earlier than that. There's a full Revi's that's absorbed in the garment, and nevertheless, it's not going to be tameh until it's actually extracted. Alma, and now, see the Rashi over here, despite the fact that it can be extracted, although you're going to have to do so with a lot of work, but nevertheless, it's going to be tahor in its current state. And so, what would we say in such a scenario? So, I'm Rav Kahana. So, the Gemara over here, Rav Kahana is giving a suggestion in terms of what the Mishnah over here is describing, this Mishnah in Olos. And we could defend. We could still defend Reish Lakish. Mikula Revi'a Shano Kanshe Eno Dam Tavusa. I'm sorry, Shani Dam Tavusa De Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, well, you know what? This Mishnah may not be talking about absolute blood, but Dam Tavusa. What is Dam Tavusa? Rashi over here points out a person was killed, murdered, and Rachmanos. So he started bleeding before he died, and then he bled a little bit more after he died. Bleeding before you die, that's not Dam. That's Metame. Right? We all know this. You have a cut, right? Blood comes out, even if it's a lot of blood. That blood is not it's not going to be an avatuma. It's only the blood. It's only the postmortem blood that's going to be an avatuma. This person was killed. This person now had blood coming out before he died and after he died, and you had a mixture of this blood together. Is the majority of it pre-death blood or post-death blood? So it's a mixture, and we don't know. So this is what's called dam tavusa. So there are certain kulas, there are certain leniencies because of this suffek. And so what Rav Kahana is suggesting is that the Mishnah here is describing Dam Tavusa. Meaning if it's bona fide post-mortem blood, so then maybe it would be tameh even while it's absorbed. Again, we're defending Reish Lakish. So that could be a possibility of this Mishnah. On the other hand, the Mishnah over here that we just read is talking about Dam Tavusa, which anyway is a suffek, and we could be more makel by a suffek. Okay, that's a way to read the Mishnah. And again, we do this in order to defend Reish Lakish. We're going to go one more round of this. Call habalu sheni yochalatzis tahor. If it's balu and it cannot and it cannot exit, it's going to be tahor. Now, you read this. It's a Mishnah. It's a Braisa. Now you read this and hayacholatzis tamei. Sounds like as long as it could come out, it's going to be tamei v'afagav delo nafik, even though it didn't actually come out. Okay. Now, finally, we have a support for Reish Lakish. Well, Reish Lakish uses this Mishnah to challenge Rav Yochanan. And now you understand, you see a debate amongst the Amoraim, and now you see that the Mishnais themselves actually give credibility to both positions on the Amoraim. Obviously, Reish Lakish knew this Mishnah, and so it really does support his position. So the Gemara gives an explanation of this Mishnah. Amar Rapapa. Kol hechadin yacholat says v'lo hikpil alav divra kol tahor. So Rapapa says like this. Here I'm going to state the parameters of the machlokes between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. If it can exit, and the person is not makbid about it, divrei hakol tahor, everyone's going to agree that's tahor. And we can go now back to our scenario of the stain of blood. Meaning, after taking off the superficial level of the stain, and all you're left with is the absorbed stain, and it's really not going to come out, meaning we already passed chemicals over it. And on top of that, if the person is not that concerned with it, doesn't bother him, so then Reish Lakish Rav Yochanan have no disagreement. Under those circumstances, they'd say tahor. Yacholatzis v'hikpid alav divra kol tameh. Now, if it could come out and you're makpid, meaning you want to take it out, so then everyone would agree that would be tameh even in its present state. Ki pligi b'yacholatzis v'lo hikpid alav. So we're talking the machlokis between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan is in the following scenario. It could come out. We could get it out of its absorbed state. It just happens to me right now. I don't care. It doesn't bother me. So mar savakim d'yacholatzis afagav d'lo hikpid alav. And so this is the machlokes between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. According to Reish Lakish, if it could come out, and even though the person is not makbid, but still, by virtue of the fact that it could come out, so therefore it's going to be considered tameh even in its current state. Whereas according to Rav Yochanan, only if you're makbid. Only if you're makbid. And that means according to Rav Yochanan, all the Mishnah we just learned together, Kol HaBalua, that's talking about a case where you want to get it out, and under those circumstances, it's going to be tameh even in its absorbed state. Okay. Finishing up yesterday's daf, now starting today's daf, we're on the very top of Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, and we're continuing the Mishnah. The Mishnah gave us a formula, right? Clear instructions. of what to do in order to be mavir, in order to remove the kesem. Or at least not all of it, but at least the superficial part of it. And also, it's a test to know whether it's a kesem of blood or it's a kesem of some other item. We went through the seven liquids. They're not all liquids. The first three are liquids. The first three, that's the spit, the chewed chewed grains. I'm not sure if that's a liquid, but it's chewed. So it's referred to as megrisim and meraglim. That's the urine. So the first three are liquids. After that, it's a bunch of minerals: neser, boris, kamuna, ashleg. Now neser, we pointed out yesterday, is really aloe. So it's not fair to call it a mineral. And boris, kumina, and ashleg. Okay, various minerals. The Gemara helped us yesterday a little bit with trying to identify what they are. And even after the Gemara helped us identify, we still struggle. But anyway, the Gemara continues. Ezu roktafa. So the first thing on the list that you need is spit, but not just spit, but roktafa. It is a more potent spit. Okay, now how do you get there? Tana. Koshalo tam klumba mi ba'erev. So the Bryce over here giving us a better description of the kind of spit that we're looking for. We need spit from a person who didn't eat the night prior. Now, what exactly does that mean? So, Savra Papa came to Rav Lamemer command Amarla lo tamidi beorsa. So, Rav Papa thought that what the Brisa meant is that you didn't eat. Not only did you not eat this morning, you didn't eat last night as well. You skipped dinner last night, so you went to bed hungry, and you woke up this morning, and you still haven't eaten. That's the rok tuffel that the Mishnah here is demanding. So, Amale Rava mi ketani by erev mi by erev ketani. So Rava says to Rav Papa, you got to read the Braisa more carefully. It doesn't say by Erev, it says mi by Erev, which means from the evening he didn't eat. Mm-hmm. So that means to say that the only thing the Braisa is excluding is having breakfast. Meaning you had dinner last night, that's fine. What the Braisa is saying is that from dinner last night, you haven't eaten anything this morning, and then you spit, that's the kind of spit that's acceptable. Amar Rava bar Brachana, Amar Rav Yochanan Ezu, Rok Tafel, Kol Shavar Alav, Chatzos Laila, Uvishena. So from last night, but here he's even more specific, from anywhere before midnight, and also you need to have slept. So it sounds like, according to Rav Yochanan, there are two ingredients to get to this valuable spit. One is that you didn't eat from the night prior, but just from last night midnight. And number two, you need to have gone to bed. Now the Gemara says, really? You need sleep? The Gemara now quotes the following. It says, Hatanan, it's a brisa. We could correct it. Tanya, Yashin Kol Hayom Ein Zer Rok Tafel. So if you slept all day, that's not Rok Tafel. So daytime sleeping does not result in Rok Tafel. Neir Kol Halayla Harei Zer Rok Tafel. If you're awake all night, that is Rok Tafel. So the point that Bryson wants to make is that it's the spit after night, not after morning. But in making the point, the Braisa did say, and you could be up all night, and that's still Rok Tafel. Now, this seems to go against Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan taught us that you have to go through the night, and you have to have slept through the night, and the Braisa doesn't seem to agree with Rav Yochanan. Hasam mimis namne. So the Gemara says, we're going to understand the Braisa in the following manner. I know the Braisa uses the word ne'or, which usually means you're awake, but it doesn't mean you were awake. It means that you were somewhere between being awake and asleep. Misnam name, hechidami. This is a classic Gemara. The Gemara does this numerous times throughout Shas and gives us the definition of not sleeping, not being awake, but being somewhere in between. Misnam name, amar avashi nimvelo nim tir velo tir. You are asleep but not asleep, awake not awake. That double language over there, Tosfos points out that we're talking about the beginning of the night, the end of the night. Beginning of the night, you really didn't fall fast asleep. End of the night, you're not fully awake. Okay, you're in some sort of stupor, in a state of consciousness that exists between being awake versus being asleep. Now, if we can give better parameters of what that means, the Gemara continues defining this misnam name. Dekarle v'ani, you call to him, he answers. Lo yada la duri svara, ask him to make an argument. He's not yet awake enough to do that. V'chimitker relay mitker. But if you remind him of a svara, he's like, oh yeah, I remember that svara. Okay, not fully alert and awake. Tana Hishkin Vishana Pirko, Ein Zer Rok Tafel. More on Rok Tafel. So far we need that. You could have had dinner last night, that's fine, but you haven't eaten since. It's the spit that comes out of your mouth in the morning. We learned that you need to be somewhat asleep, but the Gemara still has more on this. Let's say you wake up in the morning, Vishana Pirko. and yichazer. Yichazer, you're learning. You go to the daf. Well, not just going to the daf. You gotta speak. So, in other words, then now you have spoken a certain amount. That now will mitigate the effects of your spit. And your spit now is no longer rok tafel. Vad kama amar Yehuda bar Shila amar Rav Ashi amar Rav Elazar kol sheyatzei rov diburo shoshol shos. So the majority of the amount you would speak in the first 3 hours of the day. Okay, that already mitigates the saliva, and that no longer falls under the category of rok tafel. Continuing in the Gemara, may grisim. Le'isos grisim shalpul. We're up to the second cleansing agent of our Mishnah. We're describing the Megrisim. Le'im ha'misayel el reish lakish, dam reish lakish, rok tafel tzarech sheyehei im kol echad ve'echad. Now, it sounds like what we're doing with the Megrisim, grisim is some sort of bean, is that we're chewing it. Now, why are we chewing it? So reish lakish has this position, which is that spit has to be mixed in with all of the other six agents. Now, if you subscribe to Reish Lakish, this next agent of the Mishnah would seem to be a wonderful support for Reish Lakish, because the Mishnah is actually telling you, yeah, you got to chew the beans, which seemingly is because you want the spit added to the beans. Okay, and we can seemingly support Reish Lakish. So the Gemara says, no, dimla hevla depume male. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. You know why you want the beans in your mouth? Because your mouth has a certain amount of heat. And it's not the spit that's critical for the beans, but rather it's the warmth of your mouth that's critical for the beans. And the Gemara is not rejecting Reish Lakish. The Gemara is just simply saying that our Mishnah is not necessarily a proof to Reish Lakish. Masisin deloka Rabbi Yehuda detanya. The Gemara now points out our Mishnah is certainly not in agreement with Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara quotes the Braisa. Rabbi Yehuda amre megrisim roseach va'over shiyitein lesocho melech. We're talking about megrisim. You're cooking up some beans and you're boiling them up. Now, the word va'over here means right before you put the salt in. Okay, so we're chaining recipes this morning. Who knew? And in terms of the boiling of the beans, so what they would do is that they would boil their beans, and then at a certain point in time in the boiling process, they would add salt. So if you could just stop right before you added salt, that's the megrisim that we're looking for as agent number two in order to test and be mevatel the kesem on the garment. Okay? So now the Braisa uses the words va'over. So fine. So the Gemara's basic point is that our Mishnah doesn't subscribe to this viewpoint of Rabbi Yehuda. Fine. But as long as we're here, as long as we quoted the Braisa, let's just stay on the word va'over, which means right before. My mashma da'ai over lishn da'akdumehu. How do I know the word over means right before? Now you've heard this Gemara before. We've heard this Gemara before. When the Gemara talks about making a birchas a mitzvah. So when do you have to make the birchas a mitzvah? Over la'asiyasan. There's that word again. It means right before you do the mitzvah. So over here, in this context, right before I put in the salt, obviously different context, but same definition. The word over means right before. How do I know that? Usually over means to pass over. So Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Amar Kra. Gemara is going to give not one, but three different proofs from Tanakh that the word over means before. Proof number one, Vayaretz Achimatz Derech HaKikar V'Yavor Sakushi, in Sefer Shmuel Beis. So the news was being delivered to David HaMelech about the death of his son, Avshalom, and Achimaatz went in front of the Kushi. So you see the word over means before, in front of. A couple parshiyos ago, where Yaakov goes in front of his family in order to confront Esav. There we have the word huhu avar lifnehem. Ibaisema me'achav v'yavor ma'kam lifnehem v'ashem b'rosham. Pasuk from Micha. Again, the word vayavor malkam lifneim, clearly in the context, it means that the king went in front of them. So various proofs throughout Tanakh that the word avar could mean in front of. Mei raglayim sheichmitzu. We're up to the urine. That's the third cleansing agent. Tanakam chimutzam. So we need it to be fermented. And what does that mean, fermented? How long? So shloshi yamim. So the Gemara says 3 days. Am rav yochan kol shiur chachamim b'ksam mitzarach shiur l'shiuram. I made this point yesterday. I'm happy to report that I'm repeating Rav Yochanan's point. Although we have now given the seven agents, and although we have given some definition, we still need a lot more definition. And Rav Yochanan is saying this almost as it's a frustration, meaning we still really don't know. Let's say, for example, let's take the urine, for example. So, dielada dezakein, is it the urine coming from a young person or from an older person? And Rashi over here points out the older person's urine is stronger. The isha or isha, man or woman, mechusim or megulim, is it been covered or has it been exposed? Are we talking about the urinated during the summer or during the winter? And again, Rashi over here writes, the summer urine is a stronger urine. And I'll allow you to figure out why that should be. I don't have a suggestion. Anyway, v'tzarech lechaske shalosh pamim. Now, every time I take one of the agents and I put it on the kesem, so I gotta go back and forth. I gotta rub it in. Now, three times by Rav Yirmiya, am tui v'asui echadu dem am tui v'asui yitarte. My teku. Now, going back and forth. So, classic question of the Gemara. So, back and forth, is that one? Or back is one, and forth is two. And then you just need to go back again. Now, perhaps this question of Rav Yirmiya sounds familiar. The Gemara asked the exact same question back in Menachos. You see on the Masoret Shas on the side, back in Menachos Ayin Vav. So the Gemara asked this question regarding the Na'anuin Alulav. Right? Remember that by Lulav, there's Na'anuin. You got to shake the Lulav. And you got to shake it three times in all directions. And the Gemara asked the question, well, we know three times, but back is one, or I should say, forward is one, back to you is two, forward is three, or is it back and forth one, back and forth two? So the Gemara had, Rav Yirmiya had the exact same question regarding the Nanun of the Lulav. Hevirim shelo kesidran. Continuing in the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan hiktim shnim l'rishonim. Let's say you first put on number two before number one. Now we know in our Mishnah that you have to go in order. The Mishnah says it so clearly. Now, but what if I don't go in order? Now, it's interesting. Rashi over here talks about the Shneim and the Rishonim. Rashi actually takes the seven and breaks it up into two groupings. The first three, the last four. And if I can, the first three are liquids, and the last four are some form of a solid. Although I'm not sure if that's true by aloe. I'm still a little bit stuck on the aloe, but it's talking about the plant. It's talking about the sap that comes out of it. In any event, we'll break it up three and four, okay? And let's say instead of going with one, two, and three, followed then by four, five, six, seven, I first applied four, five, six, seven, and then I do one, two, three. Now, obviously, that's no good. That part's clear. The question now becomes: well, after I did four, five, six, seven, and then I did one, two, three, can I at least count one, two, three as one, two, and three, even though they were at the end of the series? And that's what we're going to see right now. Tanu Rabbanan hiktim shneim l'rishonim. So Tanicha, the one brace that teaches us shneim alulo rishonim lo alulo, that the second ones do work, the first ones do not work. Meaning 1, 2, 3 is effective as 1, 2, 3. Obviously now you're going to have to do 4, 5, 6, 7. Tanyidach now in the other brace, rishonim alulo shneim lo alulo. Now in the second brace, confusingly it says, well, the first ones work and the second ones don't work. Well, what? That second brace can't be. In other words, in this sequence, you did 4, 5, 6, 7, followed by 1, 2, 3. Well, 4, 5, 6, 7, what does that count for? It counts for nothing. You didn't do 1, 2, 3 in front of it, and you can't just simply do 1, 2, 3 now because it's too late. So that second brisa is very confusing. Amar Abaye, idivi dishniyam alulo, velo rishonim. Abaye says, we're going to stick with the correct shot in both brises, which is that if I go in the sequence of 4, 5, 6, 7, followed by 1, 2, 3, so 1, 2, 3 does work. And obviously, afterwards, you're going to have to do 4, 5, 6, 7. And both braces mean that very point. It's just a question of how to interpret brace number 2. Brace number 1 is fine. Brace number 2 needs interpretation. Umay Rishonim, Rishonim lechisidram. Ushniim lahavarasam. Now, in that second brace, when it says Rishonim, it means if you go in the order as listed in the Mishnah. Shniim just means that, and I did them, meaning 1, 2, 3, and I did them in the second slot. That's what the second brace means. Comes out to make the same point, admittedly in a confusing manner, but it makes the same point, which is that if I do 4, 5, 6, 7, followed by 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, which is the Rishonim of the list and the Shneim of how I applied them, so now that does count. Obviously, now I have to do 4, 5, 6, 7. Right. Mishnah. We are now on the bottom of Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, continuing with the Mishnah. Mishnah here returns us to the topic of Vestos. The conclusion, the remainder of our ninth perek, we come back to Vestos. A Vestos is a cycle. So as we've discussed from day one of the Masechta. So women operate in a menstrual cycle, and we broke it up into a Vestos HaKavua, it's a fixed cycle, and a Vestos Shena Kavua, and a cycle that's not fixed. Without knowing the statistics well, I would say, not confidently, that most of our women today operate with a cycle, but not a fixed one. and one that is vested she'ena kavua. I don't have the stats to support it, but I feel like I'm right. Man, I could be wrong. But the back in the day, so the women were much more on the clock. They operated with a vested kavua, a fixed cycle. Now, whenever we talk about a fixed cycle, we generally talk about how is it fixed based on a calendaric cycle. I say calendaric, it can mean a lot of things. Not a lot, but a number of things. It could be talking about where it's actually a date of the month, right? Let's assume, let's operate with a Jewish month, with a lunar calendar. So on the 5th of every month, so she just simply goes from Tishrei to Cheshvan and Kislev. And so on the 5th day of every month, so she sees on that 5th day. So that's one form of having a calendaric cycle. Calendaric cycle can also be interval of days between one cycle, the beginning of one cycle, and the beginning of the next cycle. And back then, they were so on the clock that not only did they have a fixed cycle in terms of either date or day, of interval of days, but even within the day itself, they could predict exactly when it's going to come, not only day, but hour of the day. You're going to see more of that in the course of today's daf. So one way we talk about a vesk kavua is calendaric. But there's also another way to talk about vesk kavua, and that's what's called vesas haguf, which actually is going to be most of what we're discussing in today's daf. Vesas haguf is very interesting. There's a certain physiological response that a woman has to the start of her menstrual cycle. The Mishnah over here is going to give a number of physiological responses. The Gemara is going to give even more. Now, the Rishonim say, you could see it clearly in the Rashba. I don't have it here with me. But the Rishonim say, it's not that the physiological reaction is something which prompts the woman to start menstruating. It just happens to be symptomatic. When the woman has any one of these physiological responses and she sees that the menstrual cycle comes with it, it just simply means that we can now gauge that it's with this physiological response that she now becomes Anida. Now, let's keep our Mishnah simple, although what I'm saying is not absolute, and not everyone agrees. Meaning there's Vesa Yamim, and there's Vesa Saguf. A Ves created by the calendar, versus a Ves created by her physiological, a certain physiological action. They don't necessarily coordinate, which means that when it comes to Vesa Saguf, it could be that she starts her menstrual cycle with a particular physiological action, and then 5 days later she has that action. Well, not a bad example. 15 days later, still not a good example. Sorry, I'll get there. 25 days later, she has the same physiological action. So then 25 days later, she'll be now Anida anew. Now, obviously, she could have done a bedika to see whether or not there was Anida, but again, if there's a vesis haguf that's been established, so then when she does have that physiological action, she'll be needed again. Mm-hmm. And then I can go 40 days later, and then she'll have that physiological action, and once again, she'll be needed again. In other words, the vesis haguf does not have to coordinate with any kind of schedule of the days. It can exist independent of the calendar. This is what's called a vesis haguf. How many times does it take for her to establish herself as a vesis haguf? So if you don't know the answer, you're going to be surprised by the answer, which is coming up later in the Gemara. Okay, a tease. Kol isha sheyesh la vest ayashaita. The Mishnah starts off over here with a woman that has a vest. So that means it's a vest kavua. But our Mishnah here is talking about not vestes hayamim. It's talking about vestes haguf. Kol isha sheyesh la vest ayashaita. Ve'elo ayna vestos. And these are the vestos. The Mishnah here is going to give us examples of physiological actions. I'm going to read them and then I'll try to translate them. So the Mishnah gives us about a half dozen examples, and the Mishnah says anything like them. Okay. We get to the hard part, and that is the attempt to define what they are. So the first one, mapekes, so Rashi gives us an old French word. Right? And, good. So we have someone here who speaks French. More than one person. Okay. So Rashi describes it as a stretch. If you look at Tosfos over here, Tosfos does not like that shot in this particular case. Rashi describes it more like, Tosfos describes it more like a yawn. Okay. So already you see, it's kind of hard to wrap our heads around what they are because we struggle even with the simple definition of what they are. So ma'apekes is a yawn or a stretch. Me'ateshes. Once again, if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi not here, but if you take a look at Tosfos over here, in modern Hebrew, it's a sneeze. It could be that's what the Mishnah here is referring to. Could be. Choshesh b'fi kresa, an ache in the stomach. Uvishifule me'eha, some sort of intestinal pain. Shofas uchim, vishofas. Uchimins marmarus ochsin osa. She has some sort of chill that comes over her. Okay, so shivering. So all various types of physiological actions that associated with it comes now the beginning of Renida. And then the Mishnah says, and by the way, these are examples. In other words, there are other physiological actions that could be described. The Mishnah just simply doesn't go through all of them. But anything that has these characteristics and with these physiological actions comes her menstrual cycle. She has just now established the vest. Again, I asked the question, how many times does this have to happen? And I'm asking for patience. The Gemara is going to actually address that question. V'chol shekava la shlosha pa'amim is a vest. And any time that she's koveya three times, it's going to be a vest. This end of the Mishnah over here is talking about a vest as a guf. It's talking about a vest as a yamim. Stay tuned. Tanina chada zimna. This idea of a woman having a vest kavua sounds familiar, right? It's how we opened our Masechta. So just a short 2 months ago, when we started our Masechta on Dav Beis, we talked about a woman having a vest. And so, yes, it's an important topic, but one which was already discussed earlier in the Masechta. Tanina chada zimna kol isha sheyesh la vest daya shaita. So hasam bevestas yume, hacha bevestas tegufa. So the Gemara says, previously we were talking about vestas hayamim, the calendaric vest. Here we're talking about vestas tegufa. Now, in terms of the structure of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, I don't know why it is that the vestas hayamim is discussed in Perek Rishon, the vestas tegufa is discussed in the ninth Perek, and he is super organized, as is clear throughout the Mishnayos, in terms of how he structures the Perakim. But so I don't know why there is a nine-para gap between Vestas Hayamim and Vestas Aguf. Kediktani Elohim Vestas Hayisam HaPekes Ma'atesha V'choshesha P'fi Kresa U'vishifu Le'me'a V'shofas. And clearly our Mishnah is talking about Vestas Aguf, because just read on in the Mishnah. The Mishnah clearly is talking about Vestas Aguf, and the first Mishnah, our Masechta, is talking about Vestas Hayamim. Shofas HaShafa V'azla. So the Gemara describes as one of the physiological actions as a flow. What do you mean as a flow? If she's flowing, that means that she's a Nida. Meaning that's not a separate physiological action that now is symptomatic of her starting a menstrual cycle that is called the actual menstrual cycle. That's menstruating. So Amar Ula Breder of Alai Bishofa'as Damtame Mitoch Damtahor. Oh. So the Gemara says, yeah, we misunderstood the Mishnah. She is flowing, and it's a flow that's coming out from the same place where her menstrual flow would come. But it is predicted by the fact that she has some sort of mucus first coming out. Now, I say mucus, it doesn't have to be mucus. It could be any discharge that's not blood. So she has what the Gemara describes over here as dam tahor, meaning it's some other discharge. It could be mucus, it could be whatever. In other words, it's not blood. It's not the red blood. And then, following that, then she starts menstruating. So here is an example of a physiological action that is predictive of the fact now that she is a nida. Uchemins marmaris. Also chills. Okay, and now the Gemara is focusing on the next part of the Mishnah, what the Mishnah says, and you know what? Anything like this. What's anything like this? Let's say her head is very heavy. Her limbs are very heavy. And she is experiencing some sort of, maybe we'll describe it as a fever, and also she's very nauseous. Amrav Huna Barchia Amr Shmuel Hare Amr Liamim Shnayim Levestos Achas. Now, the Gemara here quotes in the name of Shmuel the following. How many times does it take in order to establish her as a Vestas Kavua? So if it's a calendaric vest, two. If it is a physiological vest, one. Now, I told you, you're going to be a little surprised by the Gemara's numbering over here. How many times is it set in order to make it a vest kavua? Now, lamashalo manu chachamim. Now, let's say it's not a vest asayamim and it's not a vest asaguf. Now, I'm going to ask the question, but I know the answer. If it's not a vest asayamim, it's not a vest asaguf, so what is it? Okay, so again, let's hold on that question. We're going to come back to that. But in other words, if it's not category A and it's not category B, it's in this right now, amorphous third category, so then shlosha. So then three times in order to make her a ves kavua. Okay. The Gemara right away wants to know, what's in the third category exactly? So Amar of Yosef Lasui, Roshoka Vedaleva, Verekvedim Aleva, Rosachas Vagosa. So Rav Yosef would like to add the woman we just described. Her head is very heavy. Her body is very heavy. She is mild fever, a little bit nauseous. Okay. So Amalei Abayi. So Abayi says to Rav Yosef, "My kamashmala masisin hida pirsha Rava Barula." What are you talking about? That's not a separate category. That's the category of Vesa Saguf. Right? Go back to the Mishnah. Read the Mishnah. The Mishnah first gave examples, and then the Mishnah says, "Kol kayotze behem." And anything like this, which means that anything like this, what we just described—the heavy head and the cramping muscles—that's an example of our Mishnah. If we're going to put that in any category, that belongs in category number two, the Vestas Aguf. That's not a third category. So Elam Rabbi Lasui Achla Shum Verasa Vachla Bitzalim Verasa Kasasa Pilpalim Verasa. So Rabbi says, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what we're going to add to that category, and that is she eats the food and she reacts to the eating of that food. She eats garlic, she starts menstruating. She eats onion, she starts menstruating. She eats pepper, she starts menstruating. Now, it's not a Vesa Saguf because it's not a physiological action that comes internally. It is prompted by an external action. But that external action is, however, prompts her Vesa Saguf. And tells us now that there is clearly a connection, a correlation between the eating of the garlic or any of these other foods and her starting her menstrual cycle. Now, let's see if we can understand these numbers a little bit better. I mean, we will in the course of the upcoming Gemara, but right now, I'm gonna lean on Tosos. Take a look at the top Tosos over here on Samach Gimel and Beis, and these numbers, right? One, two, and sometimes three. Okay, so the number one, obviously, it's funny to it's difficult to describe that as a chazaka. It's not a chazaka. In other words, a chazaka means that it happened repeated times, and therefore it sets a pattern. So one, it's kind of hard for me to wrap our heads around, but that's for Vesa Saguf. What about two? So take a look at the top Tosfos. Hainu Karebi Damar betray Zimne have chazaka. Ah, so for the calendaric Vesto, so two because this particular statement of Shmuel subscribes to Rebbe. We know that throughout Shas, we have a machlokes between Rebbe and Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel. How many times in order to create a chazakah? We saw this back in Yevamos. We saw this in other places as well. Rebbe's of the opinion that two creates a chazakah. Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel says that three creates a chazakah. And so Shmuel's statement over here is subscribing to Rebbe. You only need two because two creates a chazakah. Okay, good. But Tosha says, what about that third category? Why three over there? Aren't we subscribing to Rebbe? So Tosos explains beautifully. V'shalom anu chacham, I'm reading Tosos. V'shalom anu chacham im gimel. Ho ve'inu ves gamor, mo de rebi debay gimel zimne v'hachi kimle. In the third category of the eating of the onions and the eating of the garlic, this is not a real vest. Meaning, it's hard to pin it down and say that we're looking at an actual vest. It's something which is a little bit odd, a little bit stranger, and over here, we're not comfortable after two saying we have established a pattern. So therefore, Tosfos writes for these more unusual precipitors of her menstrual cycle, we need to see it three times in order to have an established pattern that this is in fact a vest. So Tosfos is basically saying that Shmuel fundamentally falls like Rebbe, that two creates a chazaka, and so therefore for the vestas hayamim two, for the unusual vestas aguf you need three because they're unusual. For a solid vestas aguf like the examples of the Mishnah and like the cramping muscles. So for that, you only need one. And as I pointed out, that one's harder to explain or describe why. Why only one? I'm Rav Yosef Lo Shmi'alei HaShmaita. Now Rav Yosef says, I didn't hear this. Now he's going back to Shmuel's statement. He's saying, you know, I don't remember hearing this from Shmuel. Now you know what's coming up next, because anytime Rav Yosef says, I don't remember, so unfortunately it was because of his illness. So he suffered a terrible illness over his lifetime. That illness caused him to lose his sight, and also caused him to lose his memory of that which he learned previously. And so, impressively and inspirationally, he just learned again. He went through all of it again, and he regathered. But imagine the frustration every single time somebody says to him, oh, not only did you know this, you're the one who taught this to us. That must have been an unbelievable frustration, but it didn't deter. So Hashmaita, Amrle Abaye at Amisani Alan, the Aha Amisani Alan. So Rav Yosef, who was the student, Abaye, who was the student of Rav Yosef, says, well, you're the one who taught this to us, and I'm going to remind you. So let's say a woman saw normally on 15. Now, over here, we could be talking about an interval. We could be talking about a calendaric date. Either way, let's describe it as an interval. So let's say she normally sees on day 15. Now, if we're describing as intervals, let's assume that the 15 over here is after her Yemei Nida. Because if it's intervals of 15, so that means that the next one's starting during her Yemei Ziva, and that, of course, is impossible. If you understood that, that's great. I mean, meaning you've been following the Masechta. If not, I'm not going to explain it right now. But anyway, so we'll have the number 15 start after 7, which means 22. So she normally sees on intervals of 22 days, and then she goes to Esrim. Now, again, I'm assuming that the 20 is starting after the 7, which means 27. Okay, so all I did is just I added 7 to the numbers of the Gemara. So 15 and 20 now become 22 and 27. So Zev is the Asurin. So the first time that she makes that shift to go from 22 to 27, she hasn't lost her Chazakah on 22, but at the same time, she has to worry, she has to be concerned about the interval of 27. Shalosh Pa'amim LaYom Esrim. So now, let's say now 3 times she shifts going from an interval of 15. Now for the 3rd time she has done interval of 20. And again, 20 over here, 27. Hutu Yom Chamisha Asar V'Kavala Yom Esrim. At that point in time, the 22-day interval now is gone. It's lost. In other words, because it's 3 times now that she has not gone on the interval of 22. So 3 times to make a chazaka, 3 times to break a chazaka. That part's good. Also, because now she has gone 3 times on an interval of 27, she's created a chazaka for 27. She'enisha kavasa vesa chik v'neshosh pamim. Okay, and that is a braisa. Now Abaye says to Rav Yosef, and you on that braisa made the following comment. The amartlan, and you taught us the following, Allah, on the braisa. Am Rav Yudah Amar Shmuel Zudiv Rabbi Gamliel, Bar Rabbi Shammar Mishum Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So this was reported to us in the name of Shimon Gamliel. The braisa we just learned is authored by Shimon Gamliel. However, the Chachamim said that if she saw, so there's no need not to repeat and not to go 3 times. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean? You don't need to see twice. And if you don't need to see twice, you certainly don't need to see 3 times. What are you talking about? The amartlan. And you, and again, this is Abaye telling Rav Yosef, this is what you taught us. The amartlan, and you taught us. Lishanos bevestos. That when we say you don't need to see it twice, that's talking about vestos aguf. By vestos aguf, 1 time creates a vestos aguf. And lishalosh biyamim. And in terms of vestos hayamim, you only need to see it 2 times. Because you taught us that the halacha falls like Rebbe, not like Rav Shimon Gamliel. And so therefore, everything in the Brice is correct. It's just with one small deviation. It's not 3 that creates a chazaka, it's 2 that creates a chazaka. Fine. V'nei mezu divrei Rav Shimon Gamliel. Now, the Gemara wonders. Okay, good. So Rav Yosef now taught us his opinion about the Braisa. Why doesn't he just simply say that the halacha falls like Rav Shimon Gamliel? Meaning, if the only thing that he's adjusting is just simply the number of times to create a chazaka, so just simply say that this Braisa is going like Rav Shimon Gamliel, and we don't necessarily do. So the Gemara says, well, we did get the additional point that Rabbi Gamliel, the son of Rebbe, follows like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, which, by the way, if you think about it a little bit, it's an oddity, and that the son of Rebbe is holding not like his father, but holding like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Okay, yeah. So that part, admittedly, a little bit strange, but okay, it's not totally unusual. Okay, Haisalimuda. Yeah, yeah. Let's do it. Haisa limuda. We'll go from this mishnah to the next mishnah. Lios ro b'tchilas avestos. Okay. Now we're still staying on the vestos aguf. Rashi says so in the beginning of our mishnah. So a woman has a vestos aguf. Now if it's a sneeze, so it's kind of hard to understand our mishnah. A sneeze is a fraction of a second. So let's give another example. Let's talk about the cramping. Okay, and it's a good cramp. It's, you know, a half an hour cramp. Okay, I'm throwing out a number. But you'll see. It's important why I'm doing that. So, Haisa Limud Elios Rob Tchilas Avestos. So, as we already described in the previous mission, I quote the Rashba, I didn't quote inside. But these physiological actions are symptomatic of her menstruating. So they're just symptomatic, which means... No. This is a vest.
What's the difference between
A hargasha is a sensation of the blood coming out. But that doesn't mean doesn't necessarily mean she feels the flow, but there are certain physiological signs that a woman has for the actual menstrual flow. This is talking about things that precipitate. The haisa lamud elios roa b'tchilas avestos. So, now, as we pointed out, this is symptomatic. Now, when exactly she experiences her menstrual cycle? During the vestus aguf. So it can fluctuate. Sometimes it can be at the beginning of the physiological action. And sometimes it can be at the end, and she'll know. And because she knows, so therefore, the halacha will respond to this knowledge. Let's see the mission inside. You'll see what I mean. Haisa lamud elios roa b'tchilas avestos. So let's say it's a vestus aguf, a half an hour cramp, and she knows that with her muscles cramping, it means that she started menstruating at the beginning of the vest. Which means that during that half hour, she was working with taharos, they are now tameh. Because not only does she know that she was menstruating, but she knows that she started at the beginning of the cramping. Now let's say she herself knows that with the onset of the physiological action, let's say the cramping, she becomes anida at the end of the vestus aguf. Okay. So then, so because she knows exactly when the cycle is coming within her vest, and at this particular case, it's at the end of her cramping, so any taharos that she works with during that half hour is going to be tahor. Rabbi Yossi Amar Afyamin Vishas Vestos. Rabbi Yossi says, even days, even hours. Now, what does that mean? Well, I'll give it away now, but we're going to see it very clearly in the Gemara. According to Rabbi Yossi, a woman can have the kind of precision of the beginning of her vest, not only to the day, but even to the hour, even to the moment. And we'll explain that better in the Gemara in just a moment. Let's say that the woman knows that her vest begins, her cycle begins, right before sunrise. So she's going to be usher right before sunrise, but not any time before, and if she did a bedika, and she comes out clear, and not any time afterwards as well. Again, this position will be further explained in the Gemara. Rav Yehuda Amar Kol Hayom Shala. And Rav Yehuda says the whole day. She's usher the whole day. Now, again, this also will be cleared up as we go through the Gemara. Let's start the Gemara. Tana. Ketzad Amar Rav Yossi Yamin Vishas Vestos. This line of Rav Yossi. Can we understand it better? And the Gemara says, sure we can. Let's say this woman goes and sees every 20th day. Now again, I'll say the same thing. We could be talking about an interval over here, and then I would just add 7 days, so it'd be 27 days. Or we could be talking about a date on the calendar, 20th day of the month. Either way, comes out to be the same point. So now she knows she's seeing on day 20. And not only does she know she's seeing on day 20, but on day 20 in the sixth hour. You know how the day is broken up, and as far as the halacha is concerned, it's a 12-hour day. Yes, it adjusts for when the sun rises and when the sun sets, but just let's keep everything simple. Let's start the day at 6 a.m. Let's end it at 6 p.m. So when we're looking at the sixth hour of the day, we're talking about, from the way we look at time, from 11 to 12. Okay. So, so at this point in time, he gives yom esrim v'lo rasa asur l'shamish kol sheishaos rishonos. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, because she knows she's seeing on day 20, and even though she's expecting it to come between 11 and 12, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, that whole day is called an ona. According to Rabbi Yehuda, she cannot be with her husband that whole day, even though she knows that she's not going to start menstruating until 11 a.m., or at least till 11 a.m. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, the whole morning is off limits. Rabbi Yossi matir ad sheishaos, v'choseshes b'sheishaos. Now, Rav Yossi, she says that she can be with her husband. We already discussed earlier in the Masechta about Tashmish during the day, but we're making a separate point. She can be with her husband up until 11 because she has a vest. It's a vest kavua, and it comes only during the sixth hour, from 11 to 12. So until 11 a.m., she can be with her husband. Avru sheshaos v'lo rasa. Now, let's say after 12, she checked during that 6 hour. Happens to be that for whatever reason she skipped her cycle. Asur l'shamish kol yom kula divrei Rav Yehuda. Where Rav Yehuda prohibits the rest of the day. Because again, Rav Yehuda over here, asurs the ona. The ona is that 12-hour period. Wherever the vessels exist within the 12-hour period, that whole day becomes prohibited according to Rav Yehuda. Rav Yossi matir min ha-mincha olamala. And Rav Yossi says, no, the rest of the afternoon, she could be with her husband. Because again, according to Rav Yossi, the vest exists only in that hour. And if that hour comes and goes, and for whatever reason, she didn't menstruate, and she did a bedika, and she knows that she didn't menstruate, so then for the remainder of the day, she could be with her husband. So Rav Yossi pinpoints the vest to and localizes it to an hour, and Rav Yehuda says no. Wherever the vest is, even if she pretty much knows that's coming during a particular hour, according to Rav Yehuda, the entire ona becomes prohibited. Now, the Gemara is bothered because we have conflicting reports of Rav Yehuda. We're talking about a woman who sees around sunrise. So one Brisa says she can't be with her husband the entire day. Another Brisa says she can't be with her husband the night prior. A lokasha. But the Gemara says, but that's not problematic. It's very simple. Is it she sees before sunrise or after sunrise? If she sees immediately before sunrise, so that is part of the previous day. And so therefore, what's her ona? The night prior. If she sees after sunrise, well, that means now that it belongs to the ona of the day. And so therefore, she's prohibited the whole day. All this according to Rav Yehuda. Tinichari, we learned in one brace of Rav Yehuda, osur lifnei vesta, matir le'achar vesta. V'tan idach, osur le'achar vesta, matir lifnei vesta. Again, conflicting braces about Rav Yehuda's position. One says that she's prohibited before the vest, but not after. Another brace says she's prohibited after the vest, but not before. And again, the resolution is very simple according to Rav Yehuda. Everything depends on an ona. If she happens to be seeing at the end of the ona, meaning right, like we just described, like right before sunrise, so that means that, okay, so now with sunrise, her vest now is over, and now she could be with her husband for the rest of that day. If, let's say, she normally sees at right immediately after sunrise, her ona now is part of the day. So that means that after sunrise, she can't be with her husband, according to Rav Yehuda, for the rest of the day. Amar Rav Halacha ki Rav Yehuda. Now, this machlokes between Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda, who does the halacha fall like? The Gemara concludes. The halacha falls like Rav Yehuda. So whenever a woman has a vest, even if she can pinpoint when during the day she's going to have it, she will be prohibited to her husband for the whole ona. So even though the vest is normally expected to come immediately after sunrise, but according to Rav Yehuda, for the rest of that day, even though she did a bedika, even though the bedika came out clean, she cannot be with her husband for the remainder of that day. That night, they could be together. The Gemara quotes a Braisa. The Braisa darshan's a pasuk. The Torah says that we have to be careful, we have to be cautious from being mitamei. And Rav Yirmiyah says, from this pasuk we learn that a husband has to separate from his wife. Now the words are samuch levestan. What does that mean? Vikama. Amar Rava ona. Well, Rava doesn't tell us the definition, but Rava gives us a time amount. A full ona. Now, my love, ona achrita. Now, presumably what he means is not the ona in which she's having her veskavua, but perhaps he's describing the ona immediately beforehand. And the Gemara rejects. Lo. Osa ona. No, he's talking about that particular ona, meaning the ona in which she has her vest, like we've been describing all along. The Gemara's only problem now is that Rava is saying the halachas like Rav Yehuda two times over. V'tarti lamali. Tzricha. Di'iash minin ha'ava minani milataros of alabala lo kamash malan. So the Gemara says, if I only had the brisa that we just cited, so then I would have thought that the requirement to treat the entire ona as a time where she should be cautious is only as she works with taharas, but not as it relates to her husband. Like we discussed since the beginning of the Masechta, we're going to be overly cautious when it comes to taharas. And then I also need Rava to explain the brisa, because I could have misinterpreted the brisa. The brisa says samach levesta, and we could have thought that what it meant was the previous ona. And what Rav is clarifying is that, no, it's not the previous ona. It means this particular ona. So the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda. Rav says it twice, but to clarify two possible misconceptions. Okay, let's quickly recap. This morning we finished off the discussion of the Gemara of Tuma Balua. Although Rav Yochanan's position is much easier to defend in terms of Tumah Balua and its insulation against Tumah, the Gemara does spend time defending the position of Reish Lakish. Rambam goes like Rav Yochanan. In terms of the Amud Aleph of today's daf, defining the cleansing agents of our Mishnah, helping us get better definition, although even with better definition, we don't have either the Gemara admits this. We don't have good definition of what they are, the seven chemical agents. We started this morning on the bottom of the Amud Aleph, Samach Yom Amud Aleph, talking about Vesas HaGuf. Introduction to not just Vesas HaYamim, which was the beginning of the Masechta, but Vesas HaGuf. Physiological actions that are symptomatic of her starting a menstrual cycle. Interesting, the Gemara says, one time is all you need in order to establish a Vesas HaGuf. What are Vesas HaGuf? So we went through them in the Mishnah, we gave other examples as well. There are minor Vesas HaGuf, those are the eating of the garlic and eating of the onion, but they are really so minor that in order to establish them, that has to occur and recur three times. In terms of Vesas HaYamim, how many times does a Vesas HaYamim have to need to repeat in order to establish her to be a Vesas Kavua? Machlok is between Rebbe and Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel. According to Rebbe, only two times. According to Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel, three times. It's classic machlokus of how many times creates a chazakah. Interesting, the Gemara over here certainly seems to side, Rav Yosef certainly seems to side with the position of Rav Shimon Gamliel. The halacha is like Rebbe. That's three times that creates a chazakah. The last mishnah we talked about is her anticipation of the vest. And she knows not only the day in which she's coming, she knows the hours it's coming. So does she only have to concern herself for that hour, or does she have to concern herself for the entire day in which the vest is coming? Machlok is between Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda. Rav Yossi says only for that 1 hour. Rav Yehuda says for the whole day. The halacha is like Rav Yehuda.